Hey, this is Troy from Planet 76. We've got some really good Sixers-focused content coming your way today. Make sure you subscribe to the pod so you can be in the know when we release new content. Enjoy the show. All right, welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Planet 76 podcast. Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, 12:17 a.m., jumping back on it, next to last day of February. It is a leap year. So Wednesday morning, and the Sixers are fresh off a loss to the Boston Celtics, 117-99 against Boston in Boston. I think I speak for both Michael and I when I say that I really just don't like playing the Boston Celtics in Boston. There's nothing worse in sports than doing that. You know, even playing Boston at home is just so much better, such a greater feel. I was thinking to myself today, I was like, I need to start watching these games with like the Sixers, you know, broadcast synced up to what I'm watching on TV, just so I don't have to hear, not even the announcers, just the Boston crowd just gets me going sometimes. I don't know what it is. I just really, really gets on my nerves. Anyway, this is episode 134 of the podcast, and we're going to break down that action that the Sixers had tonight with the Boston Celtics, the previous couple games with the Cavaliers and the Bucks. We're going to talk a little bit about the Sixers newcomers. We're going to talk a bit about Tobias Harris and some injury update sort of kind of news regarding Joel Embiid. And I think that's where we'll start, Michael. I'm going to hand it off to you in just a minute. But the word on NBA today, Woj says that there's hope, whatever that means, hope that the Sixers can get Joel Embiid back on the court sometime in late March. So just about a month from now is the hope. So, Michael, what's your thoughts on that as a possibility?
So I think a lot of us were maybe not expecting it to be this soon, but I think a lot of us in the back of our minds were thinking and hoping, quite frankly, very much hoping that Embiid would be returning early April, end of March, early April. So now that we can kind of see a little bit into that tunnel, metaphorically speaking, I think it kind of puts things into perspective that, okay, the Sixers might only have to hold out for a few more weeks. And, you know, we talked about it on the podcast. Things haven't looked great since Embiid went down. The Sixers have pretty much been the definition of mediocre and oftentimes bad. But again, that's just to be expected. You're missing a player who does so much for your team, who's as good as Joel Embiid is. It's not going to be easy to maintain that same level of play. So if it does end up being late March, we're looking at just about a month. So we're just under 4 weeks left. By then, who knows where the Sixers are going to be. The sixth seed still right now? I'm going to double check real quick. I'm just hoping they're the fifth seed. Half game between them and the Heat and the Magic and the Pacers. So I'm just hoping and praying that they could stay in at least the eighth seed. I think that'd be nice. That'd be really cool. And at this point, I think that's reasonable because the Bulls are 19 games back. The Sixers are 6 games ahead of the Bulls. I think that's realistic in terms of asking slash maybe expecting the Sixers to stay in front of the Bulls or just not drop all the way down there.
Yeah, we kind of talked about it, you know, just a few days ago with the Sixers in the standings right now, and I mean it would be an all-time collapse if the Sixers were to fall all the way out past the play-in. But again, as it sits right now, 5 seed, you mentioned the Heat, they're about to get a win over the Trailblazers. Just a minute left, they're up double digits, so the Sixers and Heat will both be sitting at 33-25 here in just a matter of moments. And You know, then you got the Magic and the Pacers, who are both 33 and 26, literally right there with them. So, I mean, just a few weeks ago, seems like days ago, we were talking about, you know, Sixers, Cavs, Bucks battling out for the 2 seed. Now we're talking about Sixers, Heat, Magic, Pacers battling out for 7, 8, 9, and 10. Or, I'm sorry, 6, 7, 8, and 9. 5, 6, 7, 8. There we go. Third time's a charm. 5, 6, 7, 8 for those four teams. And it's amazing where we're at. It just is. And, you know, if Embiid is healthy, I mean, we talked about this last time too. If Embiid is healthy 100% or as close to when it's playoff time, whether the Sixers are in the play-in or they somehow get the 6 seed, right now we're going to take that, right? We're going to be happy with that. And as you mentioned, 7 or 8, you know, if the Sixers get in that, then obviously they're in a play-in situation. But they only have to win one game out of that. 9-10 is a different story. But you mentioned, I mean, it's a great point. They're quite a ways up on the Bulls and Hawks, who are down there for the 9 and 10 spot right now. Now, tonight's action against Boston, Sixers were down 2 at halftime. Had moments where they played well, had moments where it didn't look so great. I just have a few kind of takeaways from this game. There was a tremendous 3-point disparity in the Sixers' favor. So 14 of 42 from 3-point territory. Celtics made just 5 threes at TD Garden, which is simply unheard of for them, especially when they play the Sixers. And then the free throw line was another story. So Sixers shot just 12 free throws. Boston got to the line 37 times and knocked down 34 of them. I mean, that's a huge difference right there. 37 free throws to 12. But again, you know, Sixers made more threes, but Celtics got to the line early and often. That played a little bit of a factor into the rebounding differential. Celtics collected 56 rebounds as a team. Sixers collected 28. So the Celtics doubled them up in that department and led the way to a 117-99 victory. Sixers were down 11 heading into the fourth. They had a really small lineup out there that got them kind of back into the game, I think within 2. And that lineup consisted of Kyle Lowry, Cam Payne, Ricky Council, Kelly Oubre, and Tobias Harris. A 5-man lineup that cut the lead from 11 to 2. Cam Payne made some shots. Ricky Council, who we're going to get to in just a moment, played well tonight again. But so, Michael, why don't you just take it and run with it? So this game against Boston and then the previous two, one against Cleveland, which resulted in a win, and one against Milwaukee, which resulted in a loss at home, pretty much in blowout fashion. So your thoughts on those three as a whole?
So at the end of the day, the Cavs game was a massive win because the Sixers did not have Joel Embiid, but the Cavaliers did not have Donovan Mitchell. Those are the games you really have to pick up without Embiid. The games where your opponent is shorthanded, they're clearly hobbled or weak in comparison to the full version of their team. That was a huge win. Obviously, it would have been cool to beat him with Mitchell too, but we're not here for style points. We need wins. Great win. Milwaukee, let's be real. Let's just call it like it is. That was a loss. When you and I were charting the schedule a few episodes ago, I think I said they're not beating Milwaukee, or that's a loss. Something along those lines. You're not beating Milwaukee. Glenn Rivers, obviously, choke artist. But there's only so much he can do, and the Milwaukee Bucks are talented, way more talented than the Sixers. It really is not a conversation. You're that shorthanded, you're going to feel that. It's going to be obvious. And it was against Milwaukee. Loss. Boston, tonight. Fourth quarter collapse. I'm just going to say it. Harris was bad. Maxey seemed like the only guy who could really score the ball in any capacity. I think he had 30-something tonight. These kind of games against Boston, games where you're kind of close the whole time, these kind of games really just get under your skin because you're thinking, wow, the opportunity to knock Boston off in Boston without Embiid, and you kind of just squander the opportunity. It's frustrating. It's frustrating because that's one side. The other side is, well, it's the Celtics. They're full strength. They're clearly better than the Sixers. Yeah, you could look at it like that, but for me, I'm looking at it as they could have beat this team, and it would have been a great win. It would have been a very much needed win because, like I said earlier, any win is fine. This goes for even when Embiid is healthy, but tenfold when he's not healthy. That's you. Any win is will be taken, whatever phrase you want to say. Any win is going to help. So definitely would have liked to see them beat Boston. Milwaukee was pretty much a scheduled loss, but a great win in Cleveland. I think their first win in a week. I think it was their first win in a week. Troy, if you want to back me up on that.
Yeah, so let me just double check. So I know it was their second win against the Cavaliers in, just a couple weeks, but so their first win against Cleveland on the 23rd of February, Friday. Their previous win before that came on the 12th at Cleveland on Monday, before the All-Star break. First win. Or last win before the All-Star break and first win after the All-Star break were at the hands of the Cleveland Cavaliers. So again, a good win there, 104-97. The thing that jumps off the page to me about the Milwaukee Bucks game is just simply the shot making of the Milwaukee Bucks and the lack of from the Sixers. So Sixers did make 16 threes, but they were pretty bad other than that. Inside, 2-point territory. So the Sixers were 36 of 97 from the floor, just 37%. And Milwaukee made 18 threes, and from the floor total, they were 43 of 79 for 54%. So it's called basketball. Like, this game has always been and will always be about baskets. And the Milwaukee, they really impressed me in what I saw from them on Sunday afternoon against the Sixers at the Wells Fargo Center. It was just their ability, even role players' ability, to knock down shots at a high level, and Sixers just couldn't keep up. And then tonight, as you mentioned, kind of a back and forth game with Boston, and you saw them fight back with that lineup I mentioned a moment ago. But then after you go on a run to cut it to two, Boston goes on like a 12-0 run, and it's over after that. It just, in classic Boston Celtics fashion at TD Garden, right? We know the story. But that one stung a little bit. So, again, here we are. And the Sixers are now, again, as we mentioned, tied with the Miami Heat, 33-25. It's official. Miami Heat got the win tonight. And Orlando and Indiana, 33-26 right there. So before we get into some specific players, do you have anything else you want to say kind of just about these standings right now as it sits with where the Sixers are? I obviously touched on it a couple times already, but your thoughts on this situation the Sixers find themselves in now and, some of those teams that are around them, your thoughts on them?
Really nothing, because this isn't something to where, like, there's just still so much uncertainty with this team, and things could look totally different between now and if Joel Embiid does return, because we could look at them now as like, oh, they're the eighth seed. Whatever, they're the fifth seed right now. They could still be the fifth seed. The NBA is just so unpredictable. And not that I'm looking at it and saying, okay, they are going to have to win out from here on out, although that'd be cool, like win more games than they lose. I'm not of the camp that, oh my gosh, like, they are not as good as this team, this team, this team. Like, yes, talent-wise, they're not going to be as good. Or no, I'm sorry. Oh, what am I trying to say? I really don't have... My thoughts haven't changed, really. I still see this team with Embiid at best as the third best team in this comp, in the Eastern Conference. I think they're better than the Knicks with Embiid. Call me delusional if you want. But not much has changed. I think without Embiid, they're just mid. They're really mid. And at times, again, like I mentioned earlier, that might be a little too generous. But I just, that's it. I mean, I don't really have anything new to add. It's just, I think this team is what it is right now. There's, things aren't looking awesome, and especially as awesome as they did before. So we're really just going to have to wait and see. That's all I got. That's really going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, a lot of unknown, a lot of uncertainty, and you know where the Sixers fall again. We've done this several years in a row now, and you know a lot of, every time in the course the Sixers have had to run, you know, throughout each playoffs that we've covered, it hasn't mattered. You know, we've speculated, okay, it's going to be this matchup, then that matchup, and we speculated that, oh, you know, the one year that the Sixers would get the one seed, and then the second round they'd be able to play the Atlanta Hawks and avoid the Celtics and the Nets or the Bucks or whoever, and then they fell to the Hawks, right? Like, you just don't know what it's going to look like in the NBA playoffs. I mean, look at the Miami Heat, for example, from play-in all the way to the NBA Finals. Like, you just don't know. And what we'll say now and what we'll say for the next 2 months before the NBA playoffs begin, or a month and a half, is that if there is a healthy Joel Embiid, we're going to feel worlds better than we do without Joel Embiid on the floor. That's just the reality of it. Now, speaking of someone, getting into some specifics. So Ricky Council IV has been playing, and he's been fun to watch for the Sixers. You know, most of his action coming in the month of February. Sixers have now closed the book on the month of February. And Ricky Council in the month of February, he had 16 points on 6 of 8 tonight against Boston. He had a 13-point performance against the Miami Heat. He had 19 against the Wizards. He had 17 against the Warriors. And he's had, you know, other moments and other games where he's shown flashes of great potential. That game against Washington, he had 10 boards. Now, there's a lot of guys injured. It's been good to see D'Anthony Melton back, although he left today's game with back spasms. Hopefully he's figuring that out and going to be okay moving forward. But Ricky Council is a guy that's taken advantage of an opportunity that he's been given. Now, Michael, are you buying or selling that, like, Ricky Council might be a solid piece of a Sixers playoff rotation? What's your thoughts?
I think he's awesome. I think he's a really solid player. Playoff rotation, I don't know who he'd play over, because you have Oubre. Well, I guess Oubre starts. Does Oubre start?
Who knows right now? He has been, yeah.
I mean, a playoff rotation is Maxey, Hield, Oubre, Harris, and Embiid. Off the bench, you have Batum, you have Lowry, you have Payne, you have Reed, you have Covington. Who does he play over? Maybe Covington? Perhaps? Payne? No, not Payne. Payne's been really good, too. But no, if Nurse does decide to go 11 deep, Ricky Council IV is there. He is there in that rotation. He is a guy, and he's said it. There's been quotes out from him directly, just putting in the work, from Nick Nurse, things like he's taken the opportunities that we've given him and he's run with them. He's a really good player. He's not Maxey-esque, but like there's sort of a guard shiftiness to him, if that makes sense. Good, really good scorer. he, it's hard to explain. Like, he's just got a, I don't like using buzzwords, but he's got like a shiftiness about him, and it's his game is very pleasing to the eye, but he's also a productive player. A lot of guys are aesthetically pleasing, but they're not actually good NBA players. Ricky Council is both. He's aesthetic. His game is pleasing to the eye, but he's also productive. He's also very good. So that's something to add to the mixture as well.
Yeah, I like that a lot, actually. I like the way you broke that down a lot. I think Council definitely brings something to the table. He has, and, you know, I mean, I rattled off some numbers, but to your point, even just watching him, like, there's just some things that he does. It's, you know, for a rookie to come in and, you know, come at Jason Tatum and attack Porzingis and get an and one. And, like, I mean, he shows a lack of fear and, you know, kind of plays beyond his years, even with the small sample size of time in the NBA so far. I mean, it's really been this last month where he's gotten time, and he's, again, making the most of that. So we'll see how that shakes out for him, you know, as guys continue to get healthy. We'll see if Covington even makes it back. Again, welcome sight to have D'Anthony Melton. I think the game, you know, he played well against Milwaukee. He's played in, you know, just three games since returning. I think he had maybe 16 against Milwaukee. Let me check. 16 points against Milwaukee in just 18 minutes. He made four threes. Look for him to obviously, you know, maybe get back into the starting lineup in his, you know, his role that he's been, you know, accustomed to in recent memory. And, yeah, we'll see. Now, without Joel Embiid, there are some players that are struggling, I think. I actually recently wrote an article on this, and I think there are three guys who will benefit the most from having Joel Embiid come back, if he does potentially come back. And my three, now there's probably several, right? Joel Embiid makes this team better, all right? This isn't breaking news. But I think three players, to me, benefit the most. One is Buddy Hield. And you're like, okay, Buddy Hield hasn't played with Joel Embiid yet. How do we know that? Well, I can point back to J.J. Redick and Seth Curry, who had career years here because they played with Joel Embiid. And I think Buddy Hield can have much of the same effect. Number two, I think, is Nicholas Batum. He's kind of struggled as of late. He's been injured too. But I just think he, you know, I mean, he's shooting like 46% from three for the Sixers this year in 30-plus games. So I think he'll play better when he's wide open in a corner because Joel is attracting a double team. And then thirdly is Tobias Harris. All right. And everybody always somewhere has something to say about Tobias Harris. A lot of times it's not good coming from Sixers fans. A lot of times it's bashing him. And you know, he's struggled at times during, you know, the month of February. Again, Sixers have closed the books on February. And in the month of February, Tobias Harris shot just 24% from three. He averaged 15 points a game, 45% from the field. And, you know, again, 15 points, 33 minutes. All of that time, obviously, without Joel Embiid, where Tobias is expected to be the number two option behind Tyrese Maxey. My thought, and I'm going to let you run with this one because I know you're passionate about this, and we've talked about this for years now. Years, Michael. Tobias Harris. Now, my thought regarding all the controversy about his performances and stuff lately is, with Joel Embiid out, we're asking a guy who is much more comfortable as a third or fourth option to play as a number two option, and he's simply not that. Sure, he can drop 25, you know, occasionally, 29, 30 occasionally. But obviously, with the way the Sixers have struggled the last month and a half without Joel Embiid, Tobias isn't a number two option on a contending team. You said it yourself. This team is mid at best right now without Joel Embiid. So, but again, I'm fine with Tobias Harris when he's the third or fourth option. You know, I think he will benefit. He always has from playing alongside Joel Embiid and being more efficient, asked to do a little less. That's just kind of my first gut reaction to all of this Tobias Harris talk as of late, is we're asking him to be something that he's not. And when Embiid is there, I'm fine with the way he plays. Michael, the floor is yours, my friend. What are your thoughts on Tobias Harris?
If you've heard me talk about Harris on this podcast once, then you've heard me talk about him on this podcast 100 million times. Is that a real number? Yeah, that's a number, right? My opinion doesn't change a lot, and that goes for everything, literally everything in my life, basketball included. I need a substantial amount of reasoning to change my opinion, and I haven't had that with Harris. I'm not at the point where I think he sucks, like 95% of you are. That's not where I am. That's not where I'll ever be, because he doesn't suck. He's a great NBA player, and while decently inconsistent, to put it mildly, he's still very good. He still is a productive player. He struggles a lot. That happens. It happens to the best players. Obviously, they don't struggle as much because not only are they held to a higher standard, but they play up to that standard. They are that level of player, and they're held to the standard of that level of player. Tobias Harris is held to a standard to which he's not a player of, if that makes sense. He's held to a standard where that standard of player is not who Harris is. He's not a $40 million a year player. I would like to think we all know this by now, considering it's the year 5 of his contract, and people are still clamoring about how he isn't worth $40 million. He robbed the Sixers. Why can't he give that money to somebody else? Because he doesn't deserve it. It's not about that. It wasn't even Harris's decision. He was offered the contract. How can we, as a fan base, as a community, decide, you know what? We know Harris isn't worth $40 million, but he still needs to play like he's worth $40 million? It doesn't make sense to me, especially when you consider, again, he was offered the contract. He didn't demand it. He didn't say, give me this money or I'm leaving. I don't even know that he went to the Sixers about it. I think they just offered him the deal before he could even really do anything. Who in their right mind would decline $40 million a year? Even if you're not worth a fraction of that, you're not declining $40 million a year. You're not saying, you know what, I'm good. I'm not worth $40 million. Of course you're going to accept $40 million. Of course you're going to think you're worth $40 million. You might not be, and Harris isn't. But that's okay. That's okay, because a lot of times players are given contracts that include money that they are not worth. Jaylen Brown got $60 million last year. Is he worth $60 million? No. And by no means am I comparing him to Tobias Harris, because he's far and beyond a better basketball player than Tobias Harris. My point being is that guys get money that they don't deserve all the time. $60 million a year for Jaylen Brown, are you kidding me? No. That's crazy. But that's what he was offered. The Celtics said, we're going to have to let him walk, or we have to offer him this contract. It's very similar situations. Obviously, very different caliber players. Very similar situation, though. This is, again, time and time again. I think Draymond's making $25 million a year. Would you pay $25 million a year for Draymond Green? Probably not, right? He's making he's 4 years, $100 million. Is he worth that at this point in his career? No, but you do it because you don't want to let him walk. You want something from him. You don't let him go for nothing. That's what the Sixers did with Tobias Harris. They traded a decent amount for him. Obviously, the things that they traded for him now look like rubbish, because it was 6 years ago almost at this point. Landry Shamet. I forget who else they traded him for, but it doesn't matter. The point is that you give up a decent chunk of your team for a player. You want to keep that player. And what do the Sixers need to do to keep that player? In question being Tobias Harris, give him the contract or he walks. This is reality. And a lot of you guys don't like to live in reality. A lot of you guys like to live in fantasy land, and that you think everything should go by your rules because you say so. When you need to live in reality is that, yes, Tobias Harris has not been playing well at all. But he doesn't suck. And just because he was given money that he didn't even ask for, but gladly accepted, as you would too, doesn't mean that he should be doing this and doing that. Yes, he needs to be playing better. Sure, he could be averaging more points in the absence of Embiid. Everyone could, sure. But that doesn't mean he sucks. Doesn't mean he should be benched. Doesn't mean he should be cut. Doesn't mean he's a bum. Doesn't mean we should give all his money to someone else who deserves it. I see that all the time. It just is what it is. This is Tobias Harris. We know this. It's been going on for a while now. That's still no reason to call him a bum, loser, trash bag. There's never really a reason to call a player a bum, loser, trash bag. So that's it. I hope whoever is listening and watching can take something from that. That's all I got.
I love it. I love it. You know, I think if I did my homework and, you know, found a video from 2 years ago, it's you and I saying the exact same thing about Tobias Harris and his contract. Maybe I will find that and put a date on it and show people. Because we have been saying the same thing on this podcast. And that is, you cannot blame Tobias Harris for the contract that he signed. Blame the Sixers. Blame somebody else. Don't blame a guy for taking money, like you said. Yeah. So, sure, he can play better. Sure, we want him to play better. Sure, we wish he was averaging 27 in Embiid's absence. But we don't expect that from Tobias Harris. And, you know, Embiid comes back. He's been efficient at times this season with Embiid. He was efficient in December and January, both playing alongside Embiid. He shot nearly 42% from three-point territory in December. He averaged 19 points a game in January, shooting 51% from the floor. February's just been a little bit of a quiet month for him, and Sixers are kind of struggling in all facets, right? It's not just Tobias Harris right now. Again, another player I mentioned real quick, just want to show you some stats from Buddy Hield and what he's done for the Sixers right now through his 8 games in a Sixers uniform. You might have known this about Buddy Hield, but he is not afraid to jack up some threes. He has shot 70 threes in 8 games in a Sixers uniform. He's made 31 of them, you know, about 43%. And again, I expect him to get better looks playing alongside Joel Embiid, because we know, again, what J.J. Redick and Seth Curry did. J.J. Redick averaged 18 points a game 2018-19 season. He attempted 8 threes a game. Buddy Hield can absolutely do that for this team. I absolutely believe that. So, now, quick couple things. So, Sixers' upcoming schedule, we knew that they were entering in last time we recorded to playing 3 teams in the Eastern Conference that were ahead of them. If you throw the Knicks in there as well, that's 4 straight. Celtics, Bucks, Cavs, Knicks, and Heat even. So a bit of a tough schedule, but things do get easier against the Charlotte Hornets at home on Friday night. The Hornets, who absolutely got demolished tonight. I think that was tonight, right? By the Milwaukee Bucks. 123-85. So they get the Charlotte Hornets. Hopefully they can beat them while they're down. And then they square off against the Dallas Mavericks after that. The Brooklyn Nets, Grizzlies, and Pelicans. So things get a little easier after that gauntlet a little bit, dealing with the teams in the Eastern Conference that are ahead of them. Michael, real quick, kind of your closing thoughts, your final thoughts on the Sixers as we turn the page to March. Turn the calendar over. What's your thought?
Just kind of scared, really. That's all. It's impossible to forecast anything. I cannot say anything because I just don't know. I just have a lot of mixed thoughts, and nothing will help me to eliminate those mixed thoughts until if and when Embiid returns. Until we know if he's going to come back and until we know when he's going to come back. If we find out he's not coming back, okay. That eliminates a lot of questions. If we find out he is coming back, that eliminates a lot of questions too, because we know what Embiid is going to do when he's back. Everyone knows it. He literally was the far and away leader of the MVP race on his way to win his third straight scoring title while also reestablishing himself as one of the best defenders in the NBA. We know what he's going to do. We know what he's going to do. So there's no questions there. What is it going to be? We have no idea. Until that happens, I will refrain because I don't know. I can't say anything. That's it.
No, but I think that's a good point in itself, even. Just there is uncertainty, there is unknown. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing I'll say, you know, my closing point in addition to what you said, your one word of being scary, because it is. We don't know, and unknown causes fear, or fear causes, you know, or is linked to a lot of unknown, and that's what the Sixers are going through right now. Especially when you look at the Eastern Conference standings, that's what's scary to me. But my thought is this, as we even talked about last time we recorded, is the Sixers trying to somehow kind of weather this storm without Embiid. Let's say Embiid does come back in time for the playoffs, maybe, you know, a few games early April just to get his feet under him and then gear up for the playoffs. Regardless of where the Sixers are at, 5, 6, 7, 8 seed, whatever it is. Before we can get to that, let's win games that we're in. All right. I'm not saying let's go blow someone out, although it would be nice to do that against the Charlotte Hornets on Friday. But you know, there's games, like you mentioned tonight, that you have a chance to win against Boston, and you just don't. Not saying every close game needs to go our way, but like, let's win some of them. We've beat the Cleveland Cavaliers twice this month recently, just, you know, in pretty good games, and those wins feel good, and the Sixers need to get some wins that help this team feel good about where they're at and build some momentum, and there's an opportunity to do that. You know, there's you know, the Knicks are coming up in early March on their schedule, back-to-back at the Garden. You get another trip, another chance at Milwaukee 2 days after that. So, like, there are opportunities to beat some teams even ahead of you in the Eastern Conference, build some momentum, win some close games, and weather the storm. So that's my takeaway, my kind of challenge even to the Sixers is let's just win some ball games, whatever it takes. You know, there are some individuals playing well certain games. Let's see what it would look like when everybody's firing at all cylinders and just go win some games. That's as simple as that. Let's do what we can for the big fella while he's out and get him in a position where he feels good when he's coming back. So that is it. That's a wrap. Episode 134 of Planet 76. We'll see you next time. Next time we record will be in the month of March. We are almost there to the end of the season, and we hope that you'll join us then on Planet 76. Peace.